Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Bill Buckmaster Show, Tucson's most trusted voice for news information. This is Ben Bueller Garcia, normally the host of American Warrior Radio, heard Saturdays at noon right here on KVOI, sitting in for Bill in the Green Things Socolow Village Studios. If you'd like to interact with us, give us a call on the Buckmaster Live Line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. That number is 790-2040. We've got a jam-packed show coming up for you today. We're going to start off with, you know, in life sometimes there's things that we expect to work, and then sometimes there's things that absolutely have to work each and every time. Our 9/11 emergency systems fall in that second category. Joining us today to talk about the technology behind this critical infrastructure is Mike Garcia. He's the Deputy Director of the City of Tucson Public Safety Communications Department. Boy, Mike, that's a mouthful.
It is.
Is there an acronym for that?
PSCD.
Okay, PSCD. Okay, as long as Developmental Services don't get confused with that.
Yeah, PDSD, no, right?
Well, Mike, you and I were talking before we went on the air just about how so many people out there, they expect it to work every time, but they may not really understand what a tough job your dispatchers and the folks working those lines have.
Yeah, there's it really is a tough job, and it's hats off to the people who sit on the floor and take those calls every day. They do so much hard work filtering through what's coming in and how to really get the right help to the people. There's a lot of frustration sometimes and fatigue on our folks' part about getting the answers from the people so that they can send them what they need. Sometimes even people call asking for something in particular where that's maybe not even what they need for the situation. So it really, our people have to guide that conversation quite a bit.
But give me an example of one of those calls.
So somebody calling, for example, just a kind of an extreme example, even saying, I need an ambulance. But what happened was there was maybe a fight or something that started, and we need the police there either first or ahead of time or a joint response, right? And also, similarly, they just want that ambulance, but don't realize that we can actually provide them information to provide some care before we get there in a pre-arrival instructions. Hmm. And we need to get through the questioning as quickly as possible so we can start the resource and help the caller with the person that they're with.
And it's I know none of the Buckmaster Show listeners ever do this, but 911 is not appropriate for a sore throat.
Correct.
Or a sprained ankle or a missing dog.
Correct.
There's other resources in the community to do that. Do you have any, I know you probably didn't think there was going to be a quiz, but do you have any kind of data, or can you give us an approximation about how many calls do your folks field on an annualized basis down there?
So sure, we have about 1.4 million calls come in and out of the 911 system a year. A little over a million of them are incoming that people are calling into our center for some sort of assistance.
Now, I'm one of those older guys, and I still, in my mind's eye, picture the lady sitting at the big, you know, wall jamming, you know, plugs into holes to connect calls. I'm guessing the technology has gotten a little bit better since then.
Yeah, just a little bit. It's gotten quite a bit more advanced, and they still sit in front of a big panel. Now it's a panel full of electronic screens. Each position has at least four computers at it, at least eight computer monitors, at least two for every system, some more if it's a radio position. And so they've got to toggle between the systems and work as effectively as they can to have this to kind of sort through the inflow of information that comes in when they're sitting in front of that position.
Now, a lot of folks, I just learned this today, Mike, and preparing for the show with you, a lot of folks don't understand that there are several 911 systems in our metro area, and you're responsible for just Tucson city limit calls.
Well,
kind of.
Okay. Yeah, there are most law enforcement agencies have a 911 center that in their jurisdiction their calls go to. They get routed to, and that's all part of the technology that's out there. There's an electronic mapping system that's gotten more and more advanced that models where the call is at and sends it to the jurisdiction that lies in that area.
So, just to interrupt, because you're smarter than me,
yeah,
with the prevalence of mobile phones, of cellular phones now, are you able to, I mean, if I'm calling from a landline at my house, the computer can pretty much figure out that's the address on that call.
Correct.
But if somebody's wandering around on a cell phone, is that pinging off towers, or how do you?
Well, that's one of the biggest technological advances that have come out lately. But yes, it basically is working off of towers or the location on that. The most recent advancement is the change to Next Gen 911, which actually the city of Tucson and Pima County just went to in March and April of this year, that brings in a whole more advanced way to track those calls and gives us a much more precise location of where the caller's calling from. So we can use GIS infrastructure to know where that call is, to plot it much better. It's still not 100% accurate, but it does give us a better location. And 15 years ago, 20% of our calls were coming from mobile phones, and now it's close to 90%.
Wow.
So most of our calls are coming from a roaming device.
And in most cases, I suppose it depends on the situation. I mean, if there's a car accident with injuries, it might be okay. I'm not going to tell you how to do your job, but it might be okay for the dispatcher to get that handled, then move on to the next call, versus I'm going to stay on the line with you until a first responder actually arrives at your location. Right?
Yes, absolutely. There are definitely some calls that we're just off and send the call for dispatch, and then we're on to the next call. And then we do what we call pre-arrival instructions for medical calls, or we're staying on the line for law enforcement calls if it's a active threat type incident where we want to maintain contact with that individual until we know that rescuers are there.
What kind of advice can you give to our callers to make it to make us more efficient on your side when we're calling in?
Yeah, that's really a great question. The very first thing that every 911 center has to verify is that location. Mm-hmm. You know, as we said, we do have some picture of where it's at on a map that comes up on through the system. But the first thing we're going to ask for is, what's the location? It's location, location, location. So the quicker and easier you can get through giving us the location, and then get us answer the questions as we're going through them. Most people only call 911 once or twice in their life. And so it's a stressful situation, and it's frustrating.
Man, I live in the wrong neighborhood.
I know, right? you want to get out and you want to just say what your problem is. But we do have a method to the questioning that, one, in case we get disconnected or anything happens, if we know at least where you are, and then we'll ask the general question about what the problem is. And then the more questions we ask, probably the less severe your incident or your emergency is, because we're trying to make sure we then send the most appropriate response.
If you're calling from home, obviously you know your address, mm-hmm. or you need to say, look, I'm at the Circle K on the southwest corner of Oracle and Fort Lowell.
Correct.
Or here's the nearest crossroads. You'll see the accident. You can't miss it when you come down the streets, kind of thing.
Correct. Yeah, name of businesses or cross streets are really helpful for us. If you don't know where you are, if you're in front of a name of a business, or you happen to know what street you're on and nearby.
Let's talk about the thing you so often see in thriller movies. And I want to get, I know TV and movies are not exactly 100%, Mike, but in the case where someone is threatened, maybe a domestic violence situation, can they call? And if they can't talk, can they just leave the line open? Is that still helpful?
Yeah, it's actually very helpful. If they can just leave the line open, we will be listening to what's going on in the background, and we will get units going if we can hear what's going on, if keywords can be put in place.
Mm-hmm.
Along with next-gen 911 also came the ability to text to 911. So you can actually, if you're in a situation where you can't have a conversation, but you can text. Oh. That really should be limited to when you're in those situations where you can't talk, because they are a little bit more difficult to get through the questioning.
Mm-hmm.
But that is an option in our region now.
We're just kind of running out of time, Mike. I wish we had more time with you, because this is fascinating. Yeah. I might have to have you on my show sometime. But this, how are you all doing down there as far as staffing? We started off by saying what a tough job this is.
Yeah.
The turnover has got to be a challenge. Are you hiring right now? And if so, if people are interested, how do they contact you about getting in the queue?
Sure. City of Tucson on the jobs app on City of Tucson, the City of Tucson TucsonAZ.gov, and then follow it to the job apps. We will be opening later in this month entry-level positions. They're not open right now, but they will be in the next 2 weeks.
What kind of qualifications? I obviously have to pass a criminal background check. And what, high school diploma?
High school diploma, okay. Criminal background check. There is a typing test that comes into place. Mm-hmm. So 35 words per minute is the mark. honestly, most people these days can manage that pretty well. There's a multitasking computer test that you go through on that, and the background check to be
and
in the building.
What is the entry salary range?
So we start at $18 an hour, and then after you complete training, we go up to $20 an hour. And then we are working on some performance increases and ways to move through the structure. One thing that we're really working on is building a career path. We really see this as a career. It's a profession, and seeing as how we are a third leg of the public safety stand, it really is something that you can have a career with, and we're giving people that opportunity.
And really, these folks are literally the tip of the spear
when
it comes to our community resources for that. And I know it's probably a very stressful job, but also at the same time, I'm sure it can be very rewarding if you really help someone out.
It really can be, and we see, you know, our region has some of the highest out of hospital cardiac arrest survival rates in the country, and a lot of that is because we focus on in our call taking. Hands on chest immediately. So we love being able to hand out our Lifesaver coins and our coins for delivering children, and then recognizing our people when they've been really effective with a police pursuit situation. And we do joint training with our partners with the public safety, and we really like to get our people involved in those things and get those rewarding opportunities for them.
Outstanding. Mike Garcia, thank you for spending time with our listeners here on the Buckmaster Show. And folks, if you're looking for a job where you can serve our community, or maybe there's a young person in your life that doesn't know where to start, definitely check these positions out, because we need them. We need them desperately. And Mike, thank you for what you're doing for our community.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Ben Bueller Garcia sitting in for Bill Buckmaster. Coming up next, we'll be talking this rather odd investment summer with our financial consultant, Shelley Fishman. Stick around.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Thinking about a river cruise? Let Bon Voyage Travel guide you to choose the perfect cruise to complement your vacation dreams. River cruising has become more popular than ever, and we know you have so many options to consider when selecting the destination, cruise line, and ship. At Bon Voyage Travel, we provide a comprehensive presentation on the top tips for river cruises and have a team of specialists to assist you. Visit bvtravel.com and view our River Cruise 101 presentation today.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Kate Delaney. Tune in later tonight as we talk about everything that happened throughout your day. Tonight at 10 on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
This portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Mona's Danish Bakery, some of the best baked goods in town, including their very, very famous and delicious Danish Kringle. And you know, it's not just baked good, folks. They're open for breakfast and lunch daily. Find them on the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. You can peruse their menus and options at monasdanishbakery.com or check out buckmastershow.com for a link. Welcome back. This is Ben Buehler-Garcia sitting in for Bill Buckmaster in the Green Thing Socolo Village Studios. If you have a question or comment, give us a call on the Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management Live Line. That's 790-2040. Joining us is our regular contributor, certified financial planner, and all-around bright, good dude, Shelley Fishman.
Well, hi, Ben. How long have we known each other?
Oh, gosh, going back to the chamber days, so yeah. Probably late 80s, maybe?
Yeah, right, 30 years.
Yeah, and we both look the same.
I was just going to say, how did that happen?
Good living, brother, just good living. I guess. Speaking of living, you know, there's that phrase, and I won't get it right, Shelley, you're smarter than me, but, you know, may you live in interesting times.
This is interesting times.
These are. This summer has been unusual, though. I mean, normally things like in Tucson, just in the investment community, kind of drop off in the summer, don't they?
They do around the country, actually. You know, the summer is, you know, sell in May and go away, or buy in May, go away, and, you know, let the summer happen. That has not happened this year. The markets have been fairly active. We've had, you know, several news stories that have really focused on the economy. We've gotten some pretty good news on unemployment, pretty good news on GDP growth, which was interesting. On the downside, you know, let me make sure that I pronounce this name correctly, Fitch, which is one of the credit rating agencies, downgraded the U.S. Credit rating from AAA to AA+. They want to be the Nana for, you know, the American political scene, but, you know, they expressed some concerns about the political situation in the U.S. and whether or not we'd continue to pay our bills.
And that's a huge deal, too, for folks that don't understand that, because basically what they're saying is you can't necessarily trust the United States government to pay their bills anymore.
Well, AA+, still pretty good.
Okay.
But it kind of was a shot across the bow.
Mm.
And then yesterday, or maybe it was this morning, I'm getting a little bit confused maybe, but they aim their cannons across another bow, and that's the bow of the banking industry here in the United States. And they said, look, these banks, a lot of them, could be in trouble, number one, because of higher interest rates and the Fed actions, but number two, and we did see some bank failures as a result of that and generally poor management on some of those smaller banks. But then what happened was Fitch is saying, because interest rates have gone up and mortgage rates have gone up, we're now likely to see more foreclosures, and that could threaten the banks that have made loans that are less than well researched.
Didn't we learn that lesson once already?
You know, I think the banks did, but Fitch is again, you know, raising the warning signs that some banks could be in a little bit of trouble. I don't know whether they're right or not. The market today, number one, it's Tuesday, and every Tuesday when I come here and I'm not watching the market does nasty things. Bill and I have been joking about that for a dozen years now. But today the market certainly didn't like the fact that Fitch was throwing some caution to the wind.
What for your average person out there, for example, you know, take my example, I'm not at all edumacated on these sorts of issues. If so, basically kind of a two-part question for you, Shelley. If I'm worried and I want to stay as safe as possible, where should I be putting my money?
Under the mattress.
Literally.
Literally under the mattress. However, there's a problem with it being under the mattress. It will never grow a dime. So, you know, and the fact that even if inflation were at 2% rather than 3%, that means you're losing 2% every year. So that's not a good place to put it. So I was directly answering your question and being a little bit snide. There are ways of investing your money in things that are virtually 100% assured. One of the things you can do is, up to certain limits, put your money in money market funds in a bank. Those funds are guaranteed up to a couple $100,000, whatever it is. And the government backs up those funds. And, you know, you can earn these days a point and a half, 2% if you shop around, maybe even 2.25%. So you can at least keep pace with inflation.
I just got a note from my bank with I think it was a CD where they're talking like 4.25.
Not bad.
That's pretty good.
That's really good. And that's safe. That's absolutely safe so long as you don't invest $5 or $10 million in CDs. Well, you know, I know you have that problem.
Yeah. So what on the other end of the spectrum, I'm very confident, I'm very optimistic, I'm very aggressive. And I can afford to take a few hits.
Okay. So there are ways of investing money that historically have proven to be very very profitable for investors, but they tend to move up and down. In other words, there's some volatility there. Mm-hmm. And those are investments in markets, in stock markets, in bond markets. And, you know, some people invest in real estate. There are various ways that you can invest your money. And so long as you're in it for the long pull, the statistics will back you up and say that, you know, you're gonna make a nice return on your money. Stocks, for instance, over the past gazillion years have earned about 11 or 12% on average per year. But if you choose any one year, they could have lost that much or more. So you've got to be willing to commit your money to the long term and then, you know, ride it out.
For someone at our age group, Shelley, what is long term? I mean, we're talking, I mean, can 10 years qualify, or is it you have to be looking further down the horizon? Or,
well, again, any year, the following year could be a disaster. So, if you're willing to put your money in for 5 or 10 years and then, you know, get advice as to how you can adjust that portfolio as you get older to make it less and less aggressive. So, you know, to answer your question with a textbook response, at your age, your mix of investments in the markets would be around 70% in stocks and around 30% in bonds, or the equivalent of stocks and bonds. At my age, you flip that. It's about 70% in bonds and about 30% in stocks. You want the stocks in your portfolio in order to get the growth when the growth occurs, but you don't want the volatility. And bonds typically are not as volatile as stocks. And then there's this summer, but that's another story.
We've got just a couple minutes left with you, Shelley, and I'm so full of questions. You'd mentioned, mutual funds and ETFs.
Right.
I don't know what an ETF is.
So mutual funds and ETFs are the ability to invest in stocks and bonds, but let somebody else do the stock picking for you. That's a good thing. The bad thing is these guys who do the stock picking for you, they all think they're brilliant and that they're great and they're all beating the markets. They're not, at least not over the long term. Mutual funds around since 1924 or something like that, they're typically actively managed. They will tell you what their strategies are. And when you buy a mutual fund, even though you go through your broker normally, you're dealing directly with the mutual fund company. You're actually giving them their money, your money. And that money increases their assets for that day. You don't know what you're going to pay for their shares when you make that investment until the market closes on that day, and then they value what their assets are, and that's the price you pay for their mutual fund.
So coming back to use myself as an example, I think that the maxim that how does it go? A lawyer who represents himself in court has got a fool for a client. So in my case, when it comes to financial investing, it'd be the kind of same thing where basically I would come to you and say, here's what I've got here, and you'd help me work through my goals.
Right.
And then I'd let you take it from there.
But I'm not smart enough. I don't have a staff of thousands of people, you know, making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year analyzing stocks and bonds. So I use money managers, and those managers very often exist in mutual funds.
Okay.
The other kind of mutual fund is called an ETF, an exchange-traded fund. It is a mutual fund. Typically, it tracks an index, like the S&P index or the Dow index, so that they're not buying stuff individually. As a result, you're not paying a lot for their management, and it's traded on the stock market so that you're not giving them the money directly. Therefore, they don't have to have a staff of people keeping that accounting. ETFs are typically cheaper to buy than mutual funds on an annual basis.
And Shelley, if folks want to talk more about this, how do they reach you?
Well, they can reach me by just going to either the Buckmaster website or my website, ShelleyFishman.com, and I'd be happy to talk to anybody who gives me a call.
Always enlightening to chat with you, Shelley. Thanks for coming in.
Have a great day.
Ladies and gentlemen, coming up, we've got Lieutenant General Jeffrey Buchanan. Stick around. Going to be good.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back to the Bill Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. This is Ben Bueller Garcia sitting in for Bill. Hey, listen, I actually visited Green Things the other day. I asked some questions about some stuff I'd put in my garden that wasn't doing so well, and they said, well, Ben, because you planted them at the wrong time. So it's time to think about spring planting now. Visit our friends at Green Things. They're at 3384 North River Road, just west of Brandy Fenton Park. Over 13 acres of options for your home gardening needs and experts to help you plan and make the right selections. Don't forget to also visit Zocalo Village for Latin American art and furniture while you're there. You can learn more at greenthingsaz.com or zocalovillage.com. That's Zocalo with a G. As the regular host of American Warrior Radio, I'm very excited about our next guest, Jeffrey Esch Buchanan. Gave 30 years of service to our nation, retiring as Lieutenant General in the Army. He's authorized to wear the coveted Ranger tab. He did 4 tours of duty in Iraq, 1 in Afghanistan. Lieutenant General, welcome back to the Buckmaster Show.
Yeah, thanks for having me today, Ben. It's my honor, as always, to be here.
So, General, I can see how a degree in wildlife biology would, you know, translate to commanding Marines in the Helmand province. What's the story there?
I went to University of Arizona, and I struggled a little bit with my initial major, and it wasn't until I found something that I loved, which was hunting. I had been hunting and fishing all my life, very interested in wildlife management, and I decided to change that major halfway through my junior year. So I ended up having to go an extra year of school, but I loved what I did. I loved what I was studying. I was spending time outdoors, and I was on an Army ROTC scholarship, so I knew I was going in the Army, and I figured I would stay in the Army as long as I was having fun and making a difference. And 37 years later, I finally retired. And I'm back engaged a little bit with wildlife. I'm a commissioner for the Arizona Game and Fish Department and able to make a difference. So I love both my time in service in uniform, but now service not in uniform, trying to give back to the people of Arizona.
You've got a second mission.
Yes, sir. Sure do.
So now, did you grow up in Southern Arizona, or you came here just to attend the U of A?
Oh, no. My hometown was Sierra Vista. I lived for a couple of years out in Sells on the Tono Autumn Reservation. One of the times my dad was in Vietnam, but mostly Sierra Vista. I graduated from Buena High School, and even though Arizona was always my home, I hadn't lived here until I retired from the Army and then moved back home, and now we live on a small ranch outside of Patagonia.
Okay. Well, so you are definitely, not only you're an expert because of your service in the Army, but just because you know this area. If you don't mind, I'd like to talk a little bit about the border situation now, because those of us, I've been in Arizona my whole adult life, and I actually do briefings for all the new arrivals out of Davis-Monthan Air Force Base, sort of a welcome to Tucson sort of thing. And I'm always very cautious to tell them, look, you know, we're 50 miles from the Mexico border, and you got, you know, guns and money going south and drugs and human smuggling going north. And, I mean, down where you are, you're literally living kind of in the thick of things. So,
sure.
A very direct question, sir, is the border secure?
I don't believe that it is for a lot of reasons. This will be a long answer, if that's okay.
Fair enough.
So let me start with a little bit of background. You know, my last job in the Army, I was one of the titles I had was a Joint Force Land Component Commander for NORTHCOM. So anytime there were land domain operations in North America, it was under our supervision and oversight. So in 2018... when we had reports of caravans coming up towards the border from Guatemala, Honduras, through Mexico, and the Customs and Border Protection asked for help and asked for presidential direction to cause the military to go. I was the commander of the joint forces that were deployed, mostly soldiers and Marines that were deployed in support of CBP and Border Patrol and U.S. Customs Service, working really between San Diego and Brownsville, the entire length of the southwest border. And we did all sorts of missions. I had worked extensively with the Mexican military in that job because of our military-to-military contact, so had a lot of partnerships there already. And I got a really strong feel for what was going on in the border and where CBP needed help. So kind of to peel back the layers on your question, I think it's a really complex problem. And as you said, we have drugs and people coming north. If you look at it just from a U.S. perspective, you think about that. You think about the northward movement. But if you look at it from a Mexican perspective, we have money and weapons moving south. And it's that money and weapons that provide fuel and energy to these criminal organizations that are causing all sorts of problems in Mexico and in the United States. What people commonly call cartels are deployed in every major U.S. city in the United States. And the border, of course, is just a place where they cross. But their operations are in Mexico, they're in Colombia, they're in the United States in every major U.S. city. So it's a complex situation. Now, wrapped among all of this is immigration. And we've had something like five or six presidential administrations in a row that have said they were going to fix immigration, and none of them has had either the capability, the willpower, or the determination to actually fix the series of problems. And so I think we as a country need to really understand what we want our immigration policy to be. And right now we're putting Border Patrol agents and custom agents out there without sufficient resources to do the jobs that we expect them.
I tell you what, I did a ride-along with the Air and Marine unit with CBP a couple of years ago, and we went out west towards California, towards Yuma, and it was scary. I mean, there's just a lot of
territory, very space, few agents. Yeah. And, you know, do you mind if I talk a little bit about the criminals, the cartels?
Well, that's why you're here.
These are very, very wily organizations. And, you know, I think people commonly refer to them as drug cartels, but actually I think that's too simple. These organizations they just exist to make money. They're all about making money. And they'll do anything to make money. They'll move drugs. They'll move people. They kidnap people. They extort. They steal fuel. There's all sorts of things. Any kind of criminal enterprise that can make money, that's what they're all about. And so, you know, and they're smart. If they want to move a large load of drugs across a certain area of the border, they'll move people in another area, cause the Border Patrol agents to collapse on them so that they can open up an avenue somewhere else. It is a terrible group of people who are preying on the weak just to make money. And there's a lot of discussion recently about whether or not they should be called foreign terrorist organizations.
Yeah, and hold that thought, because I want to talk more about that when we come back from the break. Because that, there's no reason you'd be able to guess my politics, but even me, when I saw those comments, and I think one of the persons making that comment is a former military member himself, and I was shocked and discouraged that he would say something to that effect, because, oh, by the way, I was also a Mexican citizen for 18 years. But we'll get to that when we come back after the break. But so I see a distinct separation, a need for separation between immigration and immigration policy and the actual just physically securing the border. Because if we don't have a secure border, there's no stick to go with an immigration policy once we have one. And I'm not as bright as you, obviously, but I'm a pretty simple guy. But set up centers in those countries. You come in, you apply online, you get a blood test, a criminal background check, and then we need some sort of a letter or a feel that you've got a type of labor or something that would be in demand and you could find work in the United States. I don't see that it needs to be any more complicated than that, obviously with limitations. We cannot take the whole world into our country. Our our social systems just can't support it.
Do we need to take a break, or can I comment?
Well, I tell you, let's take a break now, because I know it's going to be a long comment. Ladies and gentlemen, Ben Buehler-Garcia sitting in for Bill Buckmaster. We're talking with Lieutenant General Jeffrey Buchanan. If you'd like to engage, it's a pretty good conversation. Give us a call on the Rincon Ventures line, 790-2040. We'll be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
This is John Trout. Catch me every weekday morning at 5 before Wake Up Tucson with America in the Morning. Breaking news, weather, politics, and sports on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show, ladies and gentlemen. This is Ben Buehler-Garcia sitting in for Bill Buckmaster. We're talking just a fascinating conversation with retired Lieutenant General Jeffrey Buchanan. Jeffrey, I made a bad mistake. Generally, you shouldn't poke a three-star general with a stick, but I did that just before the break. But I could tell in your eyes you had a much more intelligent answer than I would have to my proposal about our immigration system, what we need to do.
Well, thanks, Ben. I don't know how intelligent it is, but I will say I really don't think you can completely separate border security from immigration. I think that you have to have the policy drive the action. And in this case, we've got to sort out what do we want from our immigration policy. You know, I look around, I see that we have a tremendous need for workers. A lot of those can get filled from people by people from other countries, especially if we don't have enough U.S. citizens to do that work. But if they're going to be here, I would prefer that they're here legally, that we know about it. You know, when they go to an emergency room, They ought to mm-hmm. be paying their way when their kids are in school. They should be paying taxes. And so I don't think you can – it's hard to have our cake and eat it too. You know, if we want these workers, we need to figure out how do we make sure that we have the right sort of people with enough of them to do the kind of work and that we're tracking them and that they're paying taxes and, mm-hmm. and participating in society. I think that's the way to go.
And to me, that's we're in the perfect storm, General, because between our just logistically how broken our system is, between the political lack of political wherewithal and then a wide open border. I mean, you've been deployed. You've been in the country, sir. There's a certain level of desperation that takes place with some of these families, and they're willing to risk their lives.
Yeah, I don't hold the individual families at fault. They're trying to do the right thing to take care of the people they love. The ones that concern me are these transnational criminal organizations, the ones that are preying on them, and then, you know, trying to rob resources from these mm-hmm. already poor people and making their situations worse. That's what I'm concerned
It's scary
about.
That you mentioned that. In effect, they've already infiltrated, if I can use sure. that term, our nation. When I was doing the ground ride along with CBP, about 30 miles west of Nogales, we came up over a hill, and I don't know. We're literally on the borderline, and there's these five people sitting over under a tree. It looked like a family having a picnic, but it was 9 o'clock in the morning, and it was hot. And so we obviously pull up, and it was five Chinese nationals that had literally just sauntered across the border and plunked themselves down and said, take us in. And, I mean, there was a lot of humanity there and the way that the officer treated them and took care of them. I mean, he literally took his Gatorade out of his lunchbox and gave it to them because they didn't have enough on them. But as a civilian, I'm thinking, holy cow, if these five Chinese nationals can wander across the border, what about, you know? Well, so let's talk about the thing that I think might have gotten us both kind of exercised. When I read certain elected officials were talking about, well, it's time for us to send our folks into Mexico to take care of the cartels, I'm thinking, I think that's called an invasion, and that's not generally good for things to do with our trade partner and friend to the south.
Yeah, you know, I wrote an op-ed, which was published in Newsweek, about this subject. And what was happening is you had some politicians saying, we need to declare these cartels as foreign terrorist organizations, and we need to send the military across the border. And then, so I wrote this op-ed taking that on. And basically what I said was, I laid out the case for foreign terrorist organization, and I actually agree with that. I think that you can
mean they qualify. They check the
boxes.
I
think that when you look at the State Department's qualifications or requirements for a foreign terrorist organization, has to be foreign, has to use terrorist tactics. It has to harm U.S. citizens. And when you lay all that out, you can, you know, we had 107,000 people die in our country last year from opioid overdoses. The vast majority of those are fentanyl. And most of that fentanyl is coming from precursors made in China, shipped to Mexico, and converted to fentanyl there. And it's all controlled by these organizations. But again, what I think to call them drug cartels is too simple. They exist to make money. And if you designate them as foreign terrorist organizations, that enables all the power of our government to go after what they really care about, which is their money. Mm-hmm. It's, mm-hmm. you know, that's the power of that designation. However, the second comment that was argued for by some of these politicians was to send the military across the border. And, you know, again, we have a very deep relationship with the Mexican military, the Mexican law enforcement institutions, and especially our intelligence organizations. Now, you don't read about this relationship in the paper. You
As
know,
appropriate.
It's, but it's very deep. It's very strong. We work together closely to counteract the effect of these transnational criminal organizations, to find individual people and all sorts of things. And if, you know, we have sent our military across the border uninvited twice, 1846 and 1916. And, you know, neither one of them produced necessarily what right. we were after, and they still caused long-lasting animosity. Instead, I think we need to figure out how do we strengthen our partnership so that we can work together to fight these evil organizations instead of actually offend the people of Mexico and their government by doing something uninvited. Instead, we need to work together to fight this crime.
I couldn't agree with you more. We got just about 5 minutes left. I want to sort of change the subject, given your history and your background. A lot of times the civilians, and we're very fortunate here in Tucson to have a major rescue presence here at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base, and very often those assets are available for citizen, for civilian. In fact, I think one of the squadrons here at DM just pulled a guy off a ship 500 miles off the California coast who'd had a heart attack and saved his life. The value of our military assets when it comes to natural disasters. I mean, you were sent to, was it Puerto Rico or?
Yeah, I led the military efforts on 5 major hurricanes, and including Hurricane Maria in Puerto Rico. So,
what's your take on what's unfortunately happening in Maui right now? What do those folks need? Because that's, they're floating on an island out there.
Yeah. Well, I don't have my hands in the middle of the firefighting efforts. Now, one of my sons is a hotshot in the Forest Service. He's based out of Flagstaff, and as we speak today, he's on a fire in New Mexico. But I know we don't have federal firefighters in Hawaii. And so I think that what was needed, and I'm not exactly sure what transpired in what order, but you need to get a very quick declaration and start moving more assets there. And, you know, Cal Fire is an example. California is part of FEMA Region 9 that Hawaii is part of. They have a very robust state firefighting capability, and we have a national capability controlled by this organization called NIFC, or National Interagency Firefighting Center out of Boise, Idaho, that manage all the federal assets. What I don't know, you know, I haven't looked at the forensics of how long it took them to start moving capability. Because if you're going to get them to Maui, you know, you're going to have to fly them there from the mainland, and they're going to have to move out because there's no other large capabilities based there. I've read some about why the alarm system didn't work or what happened with the alarm system. So there's some forensics that need to be dug into and figure out what we can do to understand what happened and what happened poorly so that we can fix it and keep it from happening again.
I spent 3 years in college also fighting forest fires with the Forest Service. I was on a tanker. So, I mean, unless the winds have changed, you're talking probably at least 6 hours from L.A. to Hawaii. I don't know what the range of our slurry bombers is, but I don't know if they can make that flight. Certainly not loaded.
Yeah, so part of the problem, you know, you may know that we have a large presence here based in the Southwest region of the Forest Service. It's actually based in, they have several bases they work out of. One is Fort Huachuca. You can go down there in early part of the summer and see what's called a very large air tanker, which is a Forest Service version of a DC-10. They use that as a base to actually load up and be able to fight fires. So, as you said, yeah, it's clearly within the range. You could fly to Maui or Oahu from the mainland. But what they don't necessarily have, based in Hawaii, is an ability to load slurry. So
right,
it could, in
right.
fact, drop the loads. I do know that the Hawaii National Guard, Hawaii Army National Guard, was using Chinooks to drop water as part of the firefighting. But just due to lack of prevalent wildfires, they don't have them that frequently. That hasn't been a capability that was based here in the past, and it could be in the future.
There's also just practical logistics. If I've got a 10,000 acre fire outside of Phoenix, I got plenty of room to cut line, and get outside of that. Whereas in Maui, that may not be the case. General, we're coming down to just about a minute. I want to say, folks, visit Jeffrey S. Buchanan. That's BUCHANAN.com. I love the fact that I saw a little tab there where I could actually rent your brain for a little bit of time. So if I'm a business person out there or a leader of a small nonprofit or someone who needs some advice, some consulting, you're available.
Yes, sir. Yeah, in addition to all the volunteer work I do with, the Game and Fish and State Parks, Santa Cruz County Sheriff's Department, I also still do work as a keynote speaker and as a leadership consultant. And, I'm a believer that leadership in the military, leadership in business, it's all basically the same. It could be leadership of a Girl Scout troop. It's all basically the same. What differs is the condition. So, you know, I would like to offer my services and help those who might need some good ideas about how to move forward.
Wonderful. General, thank you for spending time with us today. Don't forget, folks, visit Jeffrey S. Buchanan, BUCHANAN.com. This has been Ben Bueller Garcia sitting in for Bill Buckmaster. Thanks for tuning in and coming back. You can find this podcast and others at BuckmasterShow.com. And please, ladies and gentlemen, keep Bill and Ann in your thoughts and prayers out there. Take care.